Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 28 shopping days left until Christmas, and I think you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round, whether they be Christmas films or not. Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I'll be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight are my co-hosts, Johnny Five, the human robot.
Hey, what's up?
Mr. Bradford is here as well.
Hey, what's up with the fact that we didn't watch a Christmas movie this time?
I don't know. That was purely an accident. But also to discuss this accident with us is our good friend back again, Libby Cudmore. Libby.
I hate you and I hate this movie.
I'm so sorry. I am extremely sorry for everything that has happened and is about to happen for the next hour. Tonight on the podcast, this is another edition of Shane Black Friday, our celebration of all things Shane Black. Tonight on the show, we are definitely digging to the bottom of the barrel because we are discussing his 1991 screenplay and film, The Last Boy Scout. Now, before we get into any of that, we do have some self-flagellation to get into tonight because it's the holiday season. Holiday foods are here for the long haul, and I think most of us have some form of disgusting holiday food to enjoy on the podcast tonight. Who would like to start?
I'm the guest, so I feel like I have to go first.
Okay, that sounds fair.
I have a Claxton fruitcake, which many of you have seen on the bottom shelf of the Walmart Christmas aisle.
Ooh.
I think it's the same fruitcake that they've been putting out since forever. It comes
literally.
Yes, it comes wrapped in very cheap plastic, and supposedly it is old-fashioned and world famous. Funny story about this, my mom and her brother, my Uncle David, have one of these fruitcakes that they have been passing back and forth for at least the last decade. The same one. They just mail it to each other every Christmas. So this is for my mom and my Uncle David. Okay, here goes. Oh, that's disgusting. It's too sweet. And it's heavy. And I can't even like bite through it. Like I think I hit a cherry and my teeth are just like grinding down on it.
Oof.
It's called old fashioned cherry first.
Are these the ones that have like the multicolored gummies that look like they're like nuclear launch buttons?
That's Panettone. That's Panettone you think of, isn't it?
No, I know my dad used to get fruitcake that has like Day Glow gummies in it.
Yeah, it's got the Day Glow cherries. Oh, it has a really rancid aftertaste.
Oh no. I'm so sorry. I do have to ask though, does the fact that it says old fashioned just mean that it's been on the shelf for the last 65 years?
Yes. Okay. And honestly though, if you ask me to watch The Last Boy Scout again or eat this entire thing, I would eat the whole thing. No questions asked.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'd watch Last Boy Scout and fall asleep halfway through.
No. I should also note that it is apparently best when served chilled, which is somehow more horrifying. The idea that like, oh, it's fruitcake, but it's also cold.
Ugh.
Now you really can't bite through it, so you just gotta suck on it like a lollipop.
Also, the phrase hot fruitcake just sounds disgusting.
Well, this is like room temperature. Like, let it be room temperature. I've never eaten cake that's hot.
You, my friend, have never enjoyed a lava cake.
That's true. I take that back. Lava cake. But
okay, Libby, so thank you for that. I'm sure you're going to enjoy that for the next half hour.
The aftertaste, at least.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere. It's like a tattoo on my mouth.
Talk it out. Bradford or Jonathan, you guys got anything?
So I was, maybe some of you folks that are eternally online are aware of this, but I was made aware, thanks to my friend Joseph, of a donut called the Santa's Yum Nut. And I was very, very excited to get my hands and my mouth all over Santa's Yum Nut. However, it has come to my attention that it is not available in U.S. retailers and it is only available in the U.K. I was a hair's width away from DMing the company on Twitter to see if I was like, hey, I will pay shipping and handling and pay you extra if you ship me a Santa's Yum Nut. You don't even have to refrigerate it. I will assume full responsibility for any food poisoning that I get. I've not done that yet because I couldn't find the Yum Nut on their website, unfortunately. So I'm going to have to figure this out. It's like a Cronut with the serial numbers filed off. I could mess with it. It's got a big Santa belt on it. So I'm going to have to see what I can do. So stay tuned for the Santa's Yum Nut, hopefully. And if not, then I'll see what I can scrounge up at my local. Well, I'll see what they can throw in a bag and then throw in my car at a local Dunkin'. So
the Yum Nut Chronicles will continue.
The Yum Nut Chronicles too. The Mrs. Yum Nut Chronicles. All right.
Stop it.
Okay.
This is the worst segment we have ever done on this show, and it's going to keep going. Jonathan, do you have anything, or do you just...
Are you a chicken?
I got a good thing, and I already ate it.
But what was it?
Cordial cherries. What the hell do you think it was? It's Christmas time.
Oh, were they the Queen Anne's ones?
Hell yes, they were Queen Anne.
What flavor did you get?
I got the regular ones because I am boring.
Oh, basic. No, no.
He's a basic boy.
When I bought the fruitcake to treat myself, they had the French vanilla and the cherry cola. I bought both boxes. I'm not going to say that I ate them both in about 24 hours, but I'm not going to say that I didn't.
Those fuckers at the store had markings on the shelf for both of those, but all of them were just filled with the regular.
Oh, well, treat yourself, man. Oh, they're so good.
Can somebody educate me on what a cordial cherry is?
Do you know what magic tastes like? Like, if you took magic and you wrapped it in goodness... And then you drizzled it with chocolate. And then you managed to wrap it in a box that sounds like the trumpets of heaven.
Yes.
That's what a cordial cherry is.
Okay. I do not think that my cherry allergy would agree with it, though.
No. Probably not.
A cordial cherry, according to Libby, is the herald of the apocalypse. That sounds great.
After you eat a whole box of them, you kind of wish it was.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's just like serving size one, and they actually mean it for once.
Yeah. No, it's a cherry in like a weird gel that used to be like a brandy syrup, but now it's just corn, you know, corn syrup, and then enveloped in chocolate.
So it's like a maraschino cherry in chocolate, basically. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It suddenly occurs to me that starting this episode by talking about food on our day after Thanksgiving episode was probably not the best idea. Because now I have to go, and I've been sitting on this thing, not literally sitting on it, because it's gross.
Catching it like an egg.
Uh-huh, yeah. This is the leftover from the Halloween disgusting food season. This is a pumpkin spice flavored moon pie.
Oh.
Now, for the uninitiated, a moon pie... It's basically a s'more cake. It's like graham cracker bread dipped in chocolate and the whole thing surrounding a big wafer of marshmallow. And
way too sweet.
It's way too sweet. Sometimes pretty good. With an RC cola, you're in the South, baby. But
that's what is that? The working man's lunch, I think they call it.
Yeah, an RC cola and a moon pie. But it's a pumpkin flavored one. So here we go. I hate this.
Oh.
It's just a big gob of disgusting marshmallow in my mouth.
You
need to wash it down with some melonade.
I need to wash it down with a cold glass of melonade. That's fantastic. I lied. That's awful. So, yeah. welcome to Black Friday, everybody. I hope your Thanksgiving has been... filled with good food and good company, as long as you're keeping yourselves, you know, safe from the horrible virus that's ravaging the country still. But having said that, we have business to conduct, because this is Shane Black Friday, and this week we're discussing The Last Boy Scout. Now, I do not remember who suggested this.
But shame on you.
You're a bad person, ugly heart.
I think it was you, Joe, because I don't know that anybody else would have suggested this.
It might have been Chuck Winters, because he's been after me to watch this movie forever, because I think he likes to torture me. He's my best friend.
You can need to get better friends.
Yeah, yeah. I think the other thing is with this segment, this bit that we do every year, Shane Black Friday, we are running out of movies. And we're starting to get into the ones now that somebody on the internet a million miles away has said is a Christmas movie, and we're discovering now that's a dirty, rotten lie, because there is exactly one Christmas thing in this entire film.
I didn't even catch it.
And it's the fact that, so we'll get into this, the main character, Bruce Willis, his daughter has drawn a picture of a demon Santa called Satan Claus.
Oh, yeah.
That is literally it. I was ready for this to be set at Christmas or have something to do with like Christmas lights or something. Didn't happen. Not.
There are a lot of explosions, which are sort of like Christmas lights.
Yeah. And I'm sure when Shane Black looks at a Christmas tree, all he sees are explosions.
Bruce Willis is in it, which I'm sure some chuckle fuck somewhere would argue makes it a Christmas movie by default.
Well, yeah, he is the Grinch, right? He is the living embodiment of the Grinch.
He really is.
And then there's also the whole thing where apparently the original script was titled Die Hard.
Yeah, I heard about that.
I read about it on Wikipedia 5 minutes ago. No.
But no, the story goes that the whole reason this movie exists is because Shane Black was like basically recovering from a bad breakup. And what do guys do after bad breakups? They write the most angry, misogynistic thing they could think of.
Which with Shane Black is definitely difficult because he's written a lot of them.
Yeah. But this one in particular seems particularly rough. But so he wrote the screenplay, called it Die Hard. Producer Joel Silver saw that title and was like, hey, can I use that for my movie? And Shane Black was apparently just like, yeah, all right, whatever. But the happy ending, quote unquote, to the story is this was the script that got Shane Black like $1.5 million for a screenplay, which was like unheard of at the time.
It must be so awesome to be a white male.
Fall ass backwards into success.
Yes, while being just a misogynistic like rag bag.
Yeah, getting a cool mil and a half for your weird revenge porn after you had a breakup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate him.
So here's what we're gonna do. Now I get to torture Libby again. How many microtransgressions can I inflict upon Libby in 1 hour podcast?
It kind of mirrors the movie a little bit.
Yeah, I'm the one girl, but you know what? Let me take off all my clothes while I do this, because you are either like a cheating bitch, a child, dead, or a stripper.
Let's see. I'm curious.
Categories of woman.
Who can we blame for Shane Black's success? It looks like Fred Decker is probably the person you can, if you just want to blame a single person.
But the Monster Squad guy?
Yeah.
Why? Why him?
Because he introduced Shane Black to screenwriting.
Okay.
Let's kill him.
Let's get that fucker.
Let's make him eat fruitcake until he chokes like one of the wives in Phantasmagoria.
Okay. Wow. Let me get back on track.
Did anybody get that?
Nope.
Okay. Someone on the internet will.
Someone loved that joke. So here's what we do. Well, I'm going to ask Libby to explain the plot of The Last Boy Scout in 60 seconds or less.
Tell you what, I will do the needful this time, and I'll do the donation, and to offset some of the horrible energy of this movie, we'll be donating it to a women's cause to be determined. Keep an eye on our Twitter.
Absolutely. ChristmasCreeps.com or at ChristmasCreeps on Twitter for that. So, Libby, are you ready?
Let's do this.
So, 60 seconds or less. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, go.
Human Christmas tree fire. Bruce Willis is an alcoholic detective who, after failing to protect the stripper he was hired to protect, teams up with her ex-boyfriend, a gambler who apparently was also a football player at one point, to take down some people who are trying to blackmail a senator. Also, I think Bruce Willis stopped the president from killing a sex worker. I'm not really sure where that went. And yeah, and then a guy dies by getting chopped up by a helicopter blade. The end.
That was a good 32 seconds there.
All right.
So doing my math here, that's $28. I will go to a charity of Libby's choosing. We'll talk about that off the podcast and we'll get that going. So look out for our Twitter about that here in the next couple of days. And with that said, let's talk about The Last Boy Scout. Jonathan, I want you to lead us off on this. What do you think? How Christmassy is this not Christmassy movie?
I mean, it's Shane Black. Shane Black knows how Christmas lights works. He could have put some in the damn movie.
Well, I love this. We're going straight to the crankometer. This is going to be our shortest episode yet.
Well,
no, I'm kidding.
That's the biggest problem with this is it obviously takes place around Christmas because it's during the football season. They make points to mention, oh, it's a holiday drawing for class because our 13-year-old daughter, who's in eighth grade and is totally whining that she can't go to parties and go on dates, is also coloring in class.
Yeah, I wondered about that. I had a lot of questions.
It was a very bad drawing, too.
Yeah. Anyway, he doesn't do anything with Christmas. And we've seen other Shane Black movies before and after this where he goes all bug nose with Christmas.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
It's disappointing.
Maybe Santa put him on the naughty list and he wasn't allowed to do anything with Christmas anymore.
Highly disappointing.
Everything I read about this movie hints at that the original script was way better. But also everything I read online about the original script makes it like even more misogynistic than this script is somehow.
Oof.
Like in the original script, Milo also like did snuff films.
Oh my God.
Why am I not surprised? Yeah.
Yeesh.
Here, I'm just going to go ahead and read this couple paragraphs from IMDb because holy shit.
I'm going to go lay down while you do this.
Shane Black's original script was very different from the final film. It had more darker tone with more violence, and almost the entire second half of the script was completely different. Besides many differences with the plot and characters, Black's script was also included more focus on the two main villains, Milo and Shelley Marcone. Milo, for example, was an even nastier villain than he is in the film. In the script, besides being a hitman for Marcone, he also had a job as director of snuff films in which his men would kill kidnap women in very violent ways. There was also a scene in the script where he brutally kills an entire family who accidentally showed up near the place where a meeting between his and Baynard's men took place.
But enough about Shane Black's extracurriculars.
Other parts that were changed include a big boat chase scene with Joe and Jimmy trying to escape from Milo and his men chasing them through the fog until their boat and helicopter crash into each other. Why are they flying the helicopter so low? A shootout and fight between Joe and Marcone's men in Joe's house. Another shootout in Marcone's mansion in which Joe sneaks in after killing several guards. Joe and Jimmy saving Joe's wife, Sarah, from being killed with a chainsaw in one of Milo's snuff films.
What? Weird.
Okay, I'm now completely under my desk.
And a different final showdown between Joe and Milo, which took place outside Joe's office after he chases and tries to shoot Joe on foot. Milo gets killed by Sarah, who shoots him with Joe's gun.
All right.
Okay.
Oh, and one more thing, because this next one, too. In the original script, Baynard was the president, not the senator. And the actual villain was Baynard's son, who had killed a woman and her child in a drunk driving accident.
Also kind of a Don Jr. flavor.
You beat me to it.
Rest in piss.
We can't say that yet.
So despite all this movie's problems, it sounded like the original script was even nastier is all I can really say about it.
There's a kind of a glimpse in that where Milo, by the way, am I the only person that every time Milo came on screen I thought it was like it just reminded me of a Fred Armisen character?
He looked so much. Joe, that I was like, is that Fred Armisen? And he didn't reply.
He looks so much like Fred Armisen. It's crazy. There's a weird one line that they don't even address where Milo says, it's like, I'll show your daughter I'm a hot date. And it's like, did he just threaten to rape a 13-year-old?
Or light her on fire. Don't know.
Yeah. And then it just swept under the rug. It's like, he's got my daughter. He's going to kill her. And it's like, okay. Ugh. Yeah.
This is a Shane Black movie when Joe meets Milo for the first time. And he's like, oh, so you're the bad guy? And Milo just has this real shit-eating grin. He's like, yeah, I'm the bad guy. Ugh, God.
Like, I will give the movie a little bit of credit. Milo is an easily hateable villain and creepy. Yeah.
Yes, but... except that he's just so weird and standard. Like, I was like, I guess he's the villain. He seems to be wearing slacks.
That's like the thing, though, where he's like talking super pro. I don't know. I guess it is stereotypical, but I guess I'm giving this movie too much credit.
Yeah, Shane Black is what happens when you don't let your Kurt Sutter bake long enough.
Shane Black is what happens when everyone gets too preoccupied with whatever Quentin Tarantino's doing. Just flies right under the radar and like, hey, no one knows I'm being the same kind of piece of shit.
He's your trailer trash Tarantino.
He's a poor man's Tarantino, which, you know, I distinctly recall on this show, one of us, probably me, saying that I preferred that. And I think the long arc of this series is us realizing that Shane Black is kind of a one-trick pony.
One trick? He's like half a trick. And then a lot of fireworks, and you're like, wow, he did a lot of tricks. And they're like, hey, wait a second. Those were all fireworks.
That horse has Christmas lights on him. Get him. So, hey, let's unravel who the villains of this movie are supposed to be.
Everybody.
Here's the problem.
Literally everybody except for Corey, maybe.
Here's the entire problem with this movie. After Corey gets killed, what motivation do Joe and Jimmy have?
Friendship?
It's nebulous.
Okay, let's try to piece this together. So the whole thing starts because Joe is put on the case of basically acting as Corey's bodyguard because she has dirt on a U.S. senator and like a football, like the head of a football company, the head of a football team.
He's like this stereotypical oil tycoon / football team owner.
And if this was Tarantino, he would have been played by Joe Don Baker. So,
1,000,000%, yes.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the beginning scene, which doesn't really have anything to do with the rest of the movie. It's just sets the shitty tone.
It really does have a lot to do with the rest of the movie. But yeah, let's continue.
So we start with the song. Let's go over the song.
Oh, the song is fantastic.
Friday night's a great night for football.
Great because I was sort of I mean I don't watch football, so I'm trying to think like what would be a good night for a football? Like maybe a Tuesday every other Saturday? But this established that Friday night is a good night for football. See, I wouldn't have known that.
I have to wonder, does he rewrite the song for every different game? Like, is he like, oh, it's the Jets and the Bengals and we're in New York this time.
Also, it's Thursday.
Because he calls out that it is the Stallions and the Cats in, is it Cleveland or Cincinnati?
Cleveland, I think.
Yeah, it's Cleveland because like the coach of the Los Angeles team is talking about how much he fucking hates being in Cleveland.
Sounds like someone been to Cleveland before.
Hey, Cleveland has the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and and nothing else.
And the Mather, the big old tanker that they just parked on Lake Erie.
Cleveland has the Christmas Story House, so I can't really complain too much.
So we start out with a football player who gets a phone call during halftime from a guy that we learn as Milo, right? Like he introduced himself as Milo. That means anything at this stage, but we do get the name Milo. He basically tells him, hey, you should win the game or I'll kill you. Billy's response is to get extremely wet and then go out on field with a gun. As you do.
Right.
Yeah, this is where I was like, oh boy, this is going to be a long fucking movie.
He murders three other players and then shoots himself in the head. And that's welcome to the movie.
But I guess my question is, why murder the other players? Why not just kill yourself in the locker room? Why take these guys out with him?
I have no idea.
It just seems
I think that
rude.
Was the PCP talking.
Yeah, it's aggro for the sake of being aggro, basically.
Okay.
Wasn't this movie also originally supposed to be NC-17 before they cut it down?
Shane Black probably realized that his, you know, teenage starlets couldn't see it, so.
I don't know if it was supposed to be NC-17, but it almost got that label, and I think they cut down some of the death scenes. Like Milo's death scene, I feel like was a lot gorier than it was originally shown to be.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that in a minute. Hey, so I guess the point of that scene, though, is to set up Jimmy's character later in the film, because like he's kind of in the same position as that quarterback who kills himself. Because Jimmy's whole thing is that he's a former football player who I want to say he got kicked out for gambling, but also he got kicked out basically because he was addicted to painkillers. But also he's got this whole vendetta against sort of the industry for becoming a gambler's paradise, essentially.
What? Sports gambling? My God.
Right?
What is this world coming to?
Yeah, Jimmy brings up an interesting point where they give you so much information for football. It's like they want you to gamble, don't they?
Right.
Not wrong.
Every office in America has a Super Bowl pool.
Mm-hmm. But also the mob is like deeply tied into that too, because they are, I think as Joe points out at the end, like, hey, if we decriminalize sports gambling, the mob is going to be shit up shit creek.
Oh, what the mob will find something else to do, I'm sure.
Oh, no. don't shed a tear for the mob.
Like rigging presidential elections.
God, this movie is such a mess and we're making it even worse somehow.
I know.
Yeah, honestly, you're saying stuff and I'm like, maybe that happened in the movie. I don't know. For all I know, you are completely making up this whole film.
So Bruce Willis plays, Joe Hallenbeck, who is a washed up, drunken, it's Bruce Willis, private investigator.
Who gets but he call. Ain't no Hollenbeck girl. Hey, can I get some drums?
Good night, everybody. He gets a call from a friend of his, another private investigator, who's also fucking his wife, who says, hey, I got this job. You just got to look after this stripper who's been getting some weird phone calls. I can't take it. Here's $500. He meets up with Mike. Mike's car explodes with Mike in it, which isn't too good for Mike. Joe's response basically is like, well, shit, that was annoying. Time to go do this job for 500 big ones, because I guess somebody's going to pay me still. He goes to the strip club where this isn't the first time we meet Jimmy. It's the first time Jimmy matters, though. Jimmy, who is a more or less retired quarterback, he was kind of kicked out of the league for gambling. I get the feeling that if he hadn't created a fuss about gambling, the painkiller thing would have, let me rephrase that. I get the feeling that if he hadn't lost his touch because of the painkillers, he would have probably been ignored for the gambling thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. True. It should be noted, he is played by Earth Girls Are Easy star Damon Wayans, that also starred last year's Shane Black Friday star, Gina Davis.
That's true. Hey, look at us making connections here.
Yeah.
And then, so they meet up. And Halle Berry is the stripper, Corey, who, I'm not saying this movie needed more nudity in it. What I'm going to say is, if you're going to set your movie at a strip club, shit or get off the pot, get somebody who will do nudity. Either do it or don't.
Well, this one is, and again, this is certainly no disrespect to strippers. The movie disrespects her as a stripper. Because again, there are four women in this movie, and the one that I think we pay like sort of the most homage to, one, only because she's dead. Like, we're able to sort of put her in a holier light. And Jimmy, is really kind of nasty to her, like, you know, won't let her talk to Bruce Willis, which is fair. I wouldn't let my spouse talk to Bruce Willis either. And like pulls her out of the cage while she's working. Like, she's working.
Yeah, I guess
you don't have a job, Jimmy. Doesn't mean that she's not trying to.
I guess what I'm saying is this movie has a scene in a strip club because it's a 90s action movie, and that's just like required.
Yeah. That's fair.
She could have literally any job. She could be a waitress at a fancy restaurant. It would have made just as much sense as what she does.
Yeah. As she's serving Joe, I don't think I'd want a drunk bodyguard. Like, she keeps bringing him drinks. Like, I feel like that's going to not make him a very good bodyguard.
Let me get some coffee.
Let me get a couple warm piss.
And indeed, it kind of doesn't, because he leaves the strip club, gets accosted by some guy who he describes as like a pimp-looking motherfucker, and then shows up just in time to watch her get killed.
I have to ask, who were the guys with the pimp-looking motherfucker?
It doesn't matter. They disappeared.
Some bad random guys. Goons.
No, yeah, bad guys. These aren't. Though I was about to say, these aren't specifically goons that show up later.
No. This is like a one-off incident that happens where Bruce Willis gets, or Joe gets, like distracted while.
Okay, I guess I have to ask, whose goons do you think they were supposed to be? Because the movie doesn't bother saying.
I think they were the pimp's goons, but then that doesn't make any sense because then they disappear while he does his thing.
Why was the pimp attacking Bruce Willis? Is what I'm saying. Either these are Marcone's goons or they're Baynard's goons. Whose?
I don't think they're either one of them.
What the fuck are they doing there? But they disappear because they all get shot in like at the end of the car chase. Remember?
Yeah, I think one of them got away. But more to the point, it would have helped if one of these guys ran back to either Sheldon or to Baynard and said, "Yeah, just some weird shit went happening," you know.
And they would have been like, "Get me Bruce Willis."
Can we address the fact that the most important fact of this whole sequence is that Bruce Willis escapes certain death by telling your mama jokes, basically, yes. Because yes. It's 1991.
Oh God!
And it's just everything's just the worst. I know, yeah. I know, everything right now is supposed to be the worst, but there's a certain argument to be made that things were always the worst.
Yeah. I was amused because Corey's outfit, her sort of cowgirl outfit that Bruce Willis is watching her in. Fast forward to 2005 Sin City, and we have Bruce Willis watching Jessica Alba in a very similar outfit.
Oh, yeah.
The Sheriff Star pasties were like, well, I was like, okay, that's too much. Movie, settle down.
But also, like, there's another connection to Sin City that Bruce Willis is going up against a senator.
Yes, that's right, because it's Rourke's son.
Exactly.
That yellow bastard. See, I usually skip that part. I usually, like, after the end of the big fat kill, I'm like, I'm out.
Yeah, basically. But yeah, so all we're really saying here is that, you know, ain't nothing original in this world, and Frank Miller definitely stole that from Shane Black, right?
Yes, right. But Bruce Willis also makes I'm just going to keep calling him Bruce Willis. I did not bother learning his name because his name is Joe, and who cares?
Yeah.
He
Joe and Jimmy, come on.
He complains about the music because he's a white man. And nobody's allowed to like anything but I guess the Beatles. I don't know. It was like, that rap music. I'm Bruce Willis. I'm 1,000 years old. But he also tells her, in short, you know, she shouldn't be a stripper. She should respect herself.
And you know, you're a lot prettier when you smile. It's so bad.
Okay, just a quick editorial note. You should put the respect yourself riff in there. And Bruce Willis says, respect yourself.
Fucking movie. God. So Eddie Griffin was a club DJ. There was that too.
Yeah, Eddie Griffin's here. A lot of little people, bigger names popping up in little roles in this film.
James Gandolfini shows up later.
Wait, really?
Yeah. You didn't see him? He's one of the fucking random goons. He's the goon that looks like James Gandolfini.
I completely miss James Gandolfini in this movie. I actually paid attention for once, damn it.
And he is specifically the guy that when they're in the forest, he's the one who finds Jimmy.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so yeah, Bruce Willis leaves the club, gets attacked by Randos, who I think are supposed to be one of the bad guy's goons. I don't know. The movie doesn't know either. This is just a distraction to get him away, so Corey and Jimmy can drive off into separate cars. Corey gets rear-ended, stops, and then a bunch of guys shoot her. Bruce Willis shows up, shoots them back, and then we get a little bit of backstory where Bruce Willis used to be a Secret Service agent, apparently. And he lost his job because he punched a senator in the face for trying to murder an escort. I think the idea I'm getting here.
Was this the Senate? This was Boehner, right?
Yes.
Yes.
That's okay. Why he and Boehner don't like each other.
But there's also a photo of him and the president. Like, it wasn't even the movie wasn't really clear. Like, was
he took a bullet for the president?
Oh, okay.
See, okay. There are a lot of really generic looking dudes in this. Yes. I thought Boehner was his old partner and they stopped the president from beating up on a sex worker.
No, it was definitely Banner because
there's the flashback when he's looking at the billboard of
Banner. Like, yeah, but he looks at like another generic white guy like before they break into the room. And I thought,
Yeah. I think that was
just that guy.
Frightened Secret Service inmate number two.
This movie's so bad and dumb.
I agree, it is bad and dumb.
I like my version better, where like they used to be partners, but then like Banner sold out, and that's why he's a senator now. Like, that's a much better movie.
Yeah.
And then the president was like gonna murder an escort, but like they had to keep it quiet.
The only like saving grace of any of that is like now in the present, Joe spends his time making crank calls to Baynard's office.
Yes.
Which I wish we had gotten to hear at least one of those calls.
That would have been a great thing to put over the credits, but no.
Are 90s men okay?
No.
No.
The answer is no. I'm sorry. I mean,
you could take either 90s or men out of that, and the answer is still no.
Yeah.
Were the 90s okay? No. Are men okay? No. I said this on Twitter last night, and I firmly believe it the more I think about it. Every action movie between the years like 1987 and 1994 are all in competition for like the title of angriest movie ever made.
Yeah.
And this is like right in the middle.
It's so bad.
While I was watching it, I thought I was kind of enjoying it. I went sat through it, but then after the end, I realized it was just reminding me of Die Hard with a Vengeance the entire time. And that's what I would have liked to have been doing instead.
Yeah, anything else.
Yeah.
Oh, I enjoy myself a shitty 90s action movie. It's just, there are better ones out there.
I will say this for this movie. The longer it went and the more attention I paid to it, it actually paid off at the end. But the like hour and a half before that ending, I kind of hate it. Like, but then the ending, I mean, and there's the middle part of this movie doesn't matter, right? Like, it's Shane Black detective horseshit number three.
Yeah, I mean, we could just burn through it. Corey got killed because she was blackmailing the senator and Sheldon Marcone, who she used to sleep with Sheldon, because Sheldon was trying to bribe the senator, who was in charge of determining if gambling is cool or not in the Senate, to like basically legalize gambling for them. Because as we see, as I think I would have mentioned at the very beginning, we see a reporter go up to one of the team owners, Sheldon, and be like, Mr. Marcone, isn't it true that football sucks ass and everyone fucking hates it and you're out of a job now? The idea is that football is losing popularity, so gambling is going to make it popular again.
Which is hilarious on its face, because football has only gotten more popular in the last 30 years.
Yeah. So through a series of shenanigans involving explosions, they manage to lose the evidence, so they're back at square one. Then what the fuck even happens after
Yeah, then that? Bruce Willis yells at his daughter a bunch.
Yes.
There's a line that Jimmy has where he says, "You don't like women much, do you, Joe?" And it's like, cool, we have the thesis of the movie.
Yeah, I wrote that one down. That's pretty much the movie in a nutshell.
Yeah, also, Jimmy, his wife and son were killed by a guy. So again, like, all the women in this are dead or shrewish.
Yeah, like, Jimmy's dead wife exists only to give Jimmy character. That's her purpose.
That scene, all I could think about during that scene was the scene in Gremlins where Phoebe Cates talks about how her dad died. Which, I hate that I'm laughing about that, but it's basically the same scene, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, yes. This character you don't know, they're dead.
That's why I'm sad now.
Oh, kind of a dead mom alert.
Oh dear.
But not a protagonist.
That's Brett. I'm gonna have to call shenanigans on that one.
Yeah, I know. It's no only deal. on a technicality. Okay.
Sit on the bench.
So now I remember, they all go to Joe's house, and then the bad guys show up to kickstart the plot again by kidnapping them both.
Right, because they keep giving up, and the bad guys are like, "Hey, are you guys gonna do this movie or not?"
So the bad guys take Joe. Their entire plan is they want to kill Baynard, but they're going to frame Joe for it because Baynard just won't play ball, haha, with their scheme to bribe everybody to legalize gambling. Not that Baynard is honorable, it's just that Baynard wants too much. Baynard is out of their price range.
Hey, quick aside, for those of you listening at home that find this really tiring, watching this movie is about as tiring.
I've burned through about 40 minutes of plot in the past sentence.
in 100 years of catchphrases and quips.
Oh, it's so bad. The quips. So bad.
So there's some shit with the switch briefcase. Milo switches out with another one with a bomb in it. Milo being the villain who works for Marcone. Then Jimmy and Darian show up and save Joe, but then Darian gets kidnapped. They all go to the stadium. Marcone's last ditch plan is just to have Milo just go ahead and kill the senator. Joe fucks it up, and Marcone goes home with the explosive briefcase, blows himself up, and that's the movie.
Yes, we skipped over the part where they shoot up Milo, and then he falls into a helicopter blade and splatters, yes. And then Bruce Willis does a dance, and everyone in the stadium who forgets that they just saw a man like basically obliterated into atoms, and they all cheer.
This is my favorite moment in the entire movie.
This movie is so... any of these parts could be taken out and you wouldn't really be missing anything.
It's... Yeah.
These are all like reject scenes from a Lethal Weapon that never got written. I really feel that.
Also, Jimmy rides a horse as like a weird payoff for like a one-line quip earlier in the movie.
Yes.
Because the
dancing,
not?
Yeah, the dancing is another one-line payoff. Like, he's later, if I survive, I'm going to dance a jig.
And even though he's just
been stabbed in either the upper thigh or the nutsack.
Yeah, he just stabbed him in the dick. And then, like,
oh, yeah, Jimmy got shot through a hand and stopped him from throwing a fucking football at the senator who's up in the stands.
And apparently the football like blocked Milo's shot while Milo was trying to shoot the senator.
This is honestly what happens when we let 8-year-olds write our movies.
Well, if Axe Cop were in this movie, it'd be 100 times better.
We haven't even touched, I mean, there's the He-Man woman hater stuff, but we haven't even touched on like the really bad toxic masculinity on show in this movie too.
Oh, and on the set, because one of the reports I read was everybody on set hated everybody else on set.
Sounds about right.
Yeah,
and I honestly find that more fascinating than this movie. Like that, and then Tony Scott's other film that he did before this, Days of Thunder. Like, it's just an exercise in filmmakers just trying to see how much money they could waste while making a bullshit movie. And in this movie, it pays off with like this huge scenes in a football stadium where we've got helicopters and we've got guys on horseback, and it's just like, what the fuck are y'all doing? we're racing cars through what looks like the redwood forest. Why? I don't know. Who gives a shit? Let's just blow this money and go do some coke.
I believe there were 4 distinct shots of cars going off of cliffs in this movie as well.
Yeah, one going over a house and landing in a pool and then exploding.
And then catching on fire.
I had an MRI last week that somehow, I don't know if you've ever had an MRI, but it's very noisy. And that noise was somehow more pleasant than the last half hour of this film.
30 minutes of loud ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk.
Strapped in a metal tube.
This movie is just coherent enough that you can follow the plot from beginning to end, but only just. And so many of these action scenes could have been... They could have had any reason, and they don't. It's just...
What is the reason for anything, John?
this movie makes you question life. It's just like, why... Why are we here?
There could be stakes. They're not even really in this to get revenge or whatever for Corey. They're in it because, like, hey, why don't we blackmail the senator instead?
Yeah, they seem to forget about Corey. Because at one point he's like, well, the guys that killed her are dead. Why are you even still fighting? It's like, well, because it's his girlfriend that died.
So yet again.
He might want some, I don't know. But this film hates women so much that it's like, why would you, go... Try to save her.
Yeah, avenging Halle Berry is not enough, right?
Yeah.
At a certain point, like Joe and Jimmy go to Joe's house, and secretly Joe's daughter tells Jimmy how much Joe used to love watching Jimmy play football. And I think when she tells him that makes him think like, oh, I actually like this guy. I want to team up with this guy and be his partner, his buddy. But it just doesn't track.
Yeah, in one of the behind-the-scenes things that I was reading, they're like, despite their charisma on screen, I'm like, well, where's the footage of that?
Yeah.
Because I'm not seeing any.
These are two people that ostensibly hate one another, two characters.
Like, the only thing I can think of is that Jimmy is supposed to feel sorry for Joe, you know, because he's just like, just look at the fucking wreck he is. But because it's Bruce Willis, Bruce Willis will never let anybody feel pity for him.
No, yeah.
Let's see. Ugh. According to this, you can blame the movie's mess on it being like peak Bruce Willis, also peak Shane Black, also peak Joel Silver, also peak Tony Scott. All of them wanted to be like the head bitch in charge, pretty much.
They are all the worst. All of them. They shall be thrown into a volcano.
Joe versus the volcano. Because the main character is
Joe. And Joel Silver specifically, no, Tony Scott specifically blames Joel Silver and Bruce Willis for all of the mess of it.
Well, honestly, I mean, I think that accounts for anything like war, famine, 9/11.
It's Joel Silver's fault.
Coronavirus. It's like Joel Silver and Bruce Willis's fault.
That's true.
I guarantee you Bruce Willis owns a bowling shirt, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
Oh. He owns a bowling shirt embroidered with Bruno.
Oh,
good lord.
This would have been a fucking movie. Jimmy is instead Mel Gibson and Joe is instead Jack Nicholson.
Oh god.
Was that like a thing at one point?
They were both first. Mel Gibson was considered for Jimmy and Joe was the first. Jack Nicholson was the first choice for Joe.
Weird.
Yikes. Also, instead of Halle Berry, Corey was, if Tony Scott got his way, going to be Grace Jones.
Ooh.
Grace Jones knows better.
Yeah, she realized she was going to get this, you know, annihilated after two scenes. She didn't want any part of that. Where do we go from here? Because this is a mess and a half, everybody.
The good thing about it is if you've ever seen any other Shane Black movie, you know exactly how it's going to go. At some point, the sassy teenage daughter will be kidnapped. They will use a toy of hers to, you know, escape, because they did it in the long kiss goodnight.
Right.
And so you know all the beats already. If you've seen one Shane Black movie, you've seen all of them.
I assume in Iron Man 3, the sassy teenage girl is Mr. Tony Stark himself, who uses toys to escape.
Well, there is a child that he works with.
Yeah.
It's like a tech kid who like helps him rebuild his suit.
There is, I have memory hold that movie beyond the weird boob bunny. Like, I could not tell you a single thing about Iron Man 3 except Tony Stark's house gets blown up.
Is it weird that I memory hold the weird boob bunny, but everything else I remember in like specific detail?
Oh, I just remember that bunny.
Just remember that bunny.
Oh. I don't know what you're talking about, but I have a feeling it's going to come back up on Shane Black Friday next year.
Oh no, we've done that one. That's ancient history.
Oh, okay, thank God.
We're out of Shane Black movies that actually have anything to do with Christmas, right? Even this was the most tenuous of the most tenuous.
Yes. Are we going to do Predators next year, or The Predator? Which one was it? Which one doesn't have Walton Goggins in it? Because I'll come back for that one.
See, that's tough. I would like Libby to come back on this show, but it's got to be for a good reason.
Anime. Kidding. Sort of. Okay.
But no, I mean, the only other options for us at this point are we could do The Nice Guys, which actually does have one scene set at Christmas, or we could do Predator, which is a Halloween movie.
One scene set at Christmas is already one scene more than this movie.
That's it.
I don't know why we didn't watch The Nice Guys this time.
Because you wanted me to hurt, that's why.
Yeah, that's honest, true.
Because I'm fucking stupid, okay? That's the long and short of it. Listen, this has been one hellish nightmare of a year, and I feel like this movie like fits in perfectly with that.
Of course,
we would do this to ourselves. Of course, we're this stupid. Of course, the Last Boy Scout. Whatever. I don't know, but
this is 2020. The movie at the end, it's just a loud fucking mess that is at best misguided.
It's so loud and cynical and gross and gives me an existential crisis.
Oh, let's talk about the fucking ending, like the actual last shot. It's okay. After everything is resolved, everything's all getting better. Joe and Jimmy are talking about becoming partners in the private detective thing. and Joe and his wife are back together, and it's shown that things are up because Darian listens to Joe when Joe tells her to shut the fuck up, basically. She responds, yes, sir. And that's supposed to be like a good thing that happens.
Well, keep in mind what he said to her mother in the last scene where he's like, fuck you, Sarah. And she hugs him. Like, Jesus Christ, that was a Mickey call- Rourke.
That was a callback to when he found out she was sleeping around. She
I get that.
She's like, you're not even... It was literally, he was literally verbatim repeating her lines. That was supposed to be the fucking joke.
I get that, but it's still like Mickey Rourke wasn't this nasty to Kim Basinger in 9.5 weeks.
That's the thing. This is Shane Black's idea of a fucking joke.
It's
wait. Hang on. I think I just cracked this whole thing. So she's repeating her lines from the beginning of the movie to Joe, and he's repeating his lines to her. So this whole movie just took place in Joe's head during that one brief little conversation, right? At the very end, he snaps out of it and realizes what's going on.
Yeah, we're at the end, he's like, wait, we're adults. We can just actually talk this out like adults.
Right. But in his head, he's imagining this entire like detective scheme where he has to team up with an old ex-football player to avenge a stripper and also take down the center that he's been calling for the last 3 years.
This is just a dream. Like, he's like, yeah, in my dream, I'm friends with a football player that I like, and also that asshole friend of mine who slept with my wife is dead, and also my wife respects me, and also that senator I hate's dead.
Claire, I can tell those kids down. I can tell those kids down the street I'm not racist because I have a black partner.
It all makes.
I think we've cracked the movie.
This is actually a good movie. I'll say it now. This is actually a good movie. No.
Well, let's not forget what he says to Jimmy. This being the 90s, you can't just walk up to a guy and punch him. You have to say something cool first. I hate them so much. I hate this movie so much.
It's like a Hot Fuzz joke, but not. It's in a bad movie and not funny.
And just Shane Black is everything that is wrong with men. He's just misogynistic and too quippy for his own good, and like thinks he's smarter than everyone. And you really just want to punch him in that, you know, little smoky he calls his wiener.
Oh.
So I guess now is as good a time as any to go to the crankometer.
I guess. I mean, is there anything left to say about this movie at all?
No, I don't think so.
Usually when a movie is bad, I will recommend that people watch it and give it the benefit of the doubt. Don't watch this movie.
I mean,
just punch yourself repeatedly in the face or eat a fruitcake.
I feel really bad because this movie was on Hulu and I don't have Hulu, so I rented it.
Brad, I would have given you my Hulu login.
Sorry, come to us.
We're your friends. You can rely on us.
I think I gave Shane Black like 15 cents for this. And also,
hey, Halle Berry got like a quarter of a penny.
I also couldn't use my fast forward plugin on it either, which is a real shame. Which is a real shame.
Oh, yeah, they have to watch a whole movie.
I had to watch this hoss in real time, which was Anyways.
Sorry for you, Brad.
It's okay.
That must have been a horrible thing for you.
Is that sarcasm?
A little bit.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I know. I need to start watching movies again in full time on this show, which I did last time too, I think. What did we watch last time?
Well, last time we had our some friends from Canada on to talk about Frosty the Snowman. Last time you and I spoke.
Yes.
Christmas Evil. It was Christmas Evil.
I watched that in real time and that was worth it. That was a good movie. This movie sucked. All right.
Well, having said that, I guess we're going to have to go to the crankometer where we have to qualify this thing that we've just spent an hour bagging on. The crankometer, folks, if you're not familiar, is our patented XY-axis where we rate Christmas movies. The X-axis is how Christmassy the film is, and then the Y-axis is how good the film is. So... How Christmassy is The Last Boy Scout?
Don't we usually save -5 for things that are misusing Christmas in weird and nasty ways?
Yes.
Yeah.
So this has to be a negative by rule of exclusion. Doesn't this have to be a -4? because it is not Christmas.
Or is it a zero because it doesn't even like misappropriate Christmas?
I
want to give it a couple negative points because it could have used Christmas. There are so many places you could just throw some fucking Christmas lights, throw some goddamn tinsel in a tree, done anything at all. Because this is a Shane Black movie. Shane Black knows what he's doing. He knows he didn't put in Satan Claus on accident. He could have easily it's Christmassy as hell. He could have made this look like Die Hard, and he didn't.
Okay, that's very good points. So at least a negative two. I'm going to go ahead and agree with Brad and say this is the full negative four. Because man, oh, manity. What did we do? Why did we do this?
Just out of assist to completion. That was it.
Because we wanted to make Joe eat a pumpkin spice moon pie on air.
Oh.
I'm not even done yet.
Oh, gross.
Somebody please damn for me.
Can we talk about how bad the title of this movie is, too? It's a bad title.
Shane Black movies tend to have a title that's not really related other than like, oh, that's what it means. That one scene that I forgot. And this is the bottom of the barrel of that category.
It's so bad. So for those of you playing at home, Jimmy signs a card that Darian has of him, and he signs to the daughter of the last Boy Scout. It's so bad. I hate it.
And the idea behind that is because he sees a picture of Jimmy in a Secret Service get up and says he looks like an old Boy Scout.
Yeah,
all clean cut and proper.
And Joe like punches him when he like flushes the drugs down. Whatever.
It's whatever.
I honestly like the level of contempt that I have for this movie is tiring. I'm over it.
Okay.
I'm gonna forget about this movie ever existing.
This movie's title could have been Lethal Weapon and been like, yeah, that makes sense.
Here's the thing about this movie.
Speaking of Lethal Weapon, it stars stars Damon Wayans of TV's Lethal Weapon.
That's the movie Darian was watching too, Lethal Weapon.
Oh yeah, that's right.
We can get into quality. Here's the thing about this movie. It isn't fun. Like action movies and buddy cop movies are supposed to be fun.
This is so mean spirited.
This isn't fun at all. Like you could argue the quips, but the quips are awful and it's like far too clever by half. This isn't fun in any sense of the word. I didn't have fun with this movie at all.
No, it is a slog from beginning to end of just, hey, if you like Bruce Willis getting punched in the face and things exploding and guns being fired, you might have a good time with it, but...
Yeah, but even by that point, I love watching Bruce Willis get punched in the face. It's my favorite thing in the world. But even by the end of this movie, I was getting tired of it. It's like when you have an entire, like a giant bag of candy, and then by the time you get to the bottom, you're just like...
Yeah, it's true.
You can't eat any more of this candy.
Yeah, it's like...
ruined it for yourself.
This movie's kind of like having like an entire bag of Necco wafers. It's like, well, it's sugar. I got that going for me, but that's about all.
Can you imagine going to see this in theaters back in 1991?
No.
How unfun, like how shitty of a night would you have going to see this movie in theaters?
Well, yeah, and you're probably going with some dude named, I don't know, Trevor, and he's wearing a flannel shirt and he's like kind of in a band, but not really. And he works at the donut shop and you're probably going to break up with him anyway. Because he thinks he's amazing and you don't really have anybody else, but you're leaving for college in the fall. So you'll just kind of hang around till then. And he takes you to see this and he like tries to put his arm around you and you're like, gross, Trevor, don't. Cause you're just so turned off by this movie. And then you feel like how terrible he is.
Okay, I have a question. Does Trevor try to make you call him Trev, and could he pull it off if he did?
No. Yes and no.
Did you go to the Olive Garden before or after this movie?
You drove past a Red Lobster to get there.
This sounds a little too specific.
the poster of this movie is Bruce Willis holding a gun, Damon Wayans holding a football, Bruce Willis's name above Damon Wayans' name above Bruce Willis, and there's a fire behind them. You didn't go to see this movie. You went to the movie theater and you were like, oh, what's playing? Oh, I know those guys. Let's see that.
Yeah, yeah. And the weird thing to me about the poster is Damon Wayans is the one with all the scars on his face. But in the movie, like every scene, Bruce Willis adds a new scar to his face. Damon Wayans comparatively, you know, doesn't get that messed up, but Bruce Willis, like, he looks worse than Bruce Campbell in Evil Dead. Like, he's just a horror show by the end of this movie. Damon Wayans, not so much. So I don't know why they made Damon Wayans the one who gets all cut up and everything.
Because you're trying to make the dude from In Living Color look a badass.
That's actually a very good point.
Poster tagline, they're two fallen heroes up against the gambling syndicate in pro sports. Everyone had counted them out, but they're about to get back in the game.
That's not a tagline. That's a tag paragraph.
That explains about 15 minutes total of this movie.
That's a plot synopsis. No.
That's the Star Wars Phantom Menace of action movies. Like, I don't like gambling syndicates. I just want to see explosions.
Also, the goal is to survive. That's what it says under the title.
Oh.
Is it, though?
Goal to survive? Because if the goal was to survive, this movie would be 15 minutes long.
Wait a minute.
The goal of life is to survive.
Here's the problem. The goal is to survive is a good tagline if your movie's title is like second in goal or something like that. Like, it has to be a football pun.
Listen, if you're going to call the movie The Last Boy Scout and the tagline is the goal is to survive, it better be a movie about 100 Boy Scouts killing each other.
Okay. A Battle Royale Boy Scout edition, I'd watch that.
Yeah, basically.
Let's Santa Workshop. Let's come up with a better tagline for this movie. I mean, honestly, Be Prepared is already a better tagline for this movie because it's called The Last Boy Scout. I don't know.
So, oh, wow, I just got that. Holy shit.
There you go.
Because at the end of the movie, like, Jimmy is asking Joe for tips, and he's like, you know, that's what me and my motto. No, he's asking him, like, What else do I need to know? And he's like, be prepared, son. That's my motto. I didn't need to put together him being a Boy Scout.
I hate this movie. See, I kind of got that last thing, because you can't see them because they walk past the tree and the camera just doesn't follow as they ride off into the sunset. And it kind of sounded like a, you know, Stand By Me kind of voiceover, like, be prepared. That was my motto. But Jimmy didn't heed that. He was killed in Nam 2 years later.
The best tagline I can come up with is just for The Last Boy Scout. This ain't no jamboree. He's absolutely okay. Nothing, but it sounds good.
Okay. That's good. Okay, let me try one. Last Boy Scout. There are no badges for surviving.
That's not bad.
I don't know what that means.
That's pretty good. Joe, you got one?
Nope.
Okay,
hold on. Actually, let me retake that because I got a better one.
Okay,
so here's mine. The Last Boy Scout. The only badge you need is survival.
That's good.
That's the one. This movie sucks, y'all. Okay, so the y-axis, we got to rate this. Definitely negative points, right?
Oh, you bet.
Is there anything that we can say in this movie's favor?
I mean, I watched it all the way through, but I spent a lot of the time just being like, so this ends up being like a different action movie, right? One that I like.
There is very minimal product placement.
Yes.
Pepsi is about it, right?
Yeah.
Pepsi and maybe like an alcohol that I didn't catch somewhere.
There's maybe. Exactly one quip that I actually liked.
Lay it on us.
It. You got any plans? I was planning on smoking some cigarettes. Postpone? I don't know. These are pretty good cigarettes.
Okay.
You're a cigarette, Joe.
Hey. That's
man. Yeah, I'm trying to think of a single redeeming thing about this movie.
-3. Let's move on.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, no. -4 at least, my friend.
What I'll say is it's not really memorable, not even in a bad way. It's just kind of like it's the more boring scenes of any other action movie. And yeah, the entire time just being like, so where's the part when Jeremy Irons calls them up and gives them a riddle, or, you know, where's the part when Gary Busey gets in a knife fight with them?
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is, it's like a rough draft of every other action movie from the early 90s.
Okay. I guess I would have
much rather watch any one of those other ones.
I guess I get where you're going with a -3 and sort of like the middle of the road of abject.
It's badness and mediocrity. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I guess I can see that.
And it's just so aggressive too. Like, that's the thing that turned me off about this movie. It's just so mean and angry.
When a man shoots himself in the head in the first 5 minutes of the movie, it's just, you've set a tone. It's right. just so bad.
But then, like, the scene where we're introduced to Joe's daughter, and it's just, like, 5 minutes of the two of them screaming at each other.
Yeah.
Like, that really sours me on literally everybody in that scene. Because yeah. I have followed these people for the next hour and a half. What are you doing?
Yeah, and just, again, like, the overarching misogyny of all of it. Again, even down to, like, the child.
Yeah.
Like... Yeah. Is and that he's like such an abusive, shitty dad, and then at the end she gives into his abusiveness by calling him sir. Like, you are not a good parent, and you know, in another 15 years you're gonna be wondering why your daughter never comes home for Christmas, and you're gonna take it to Reddit like every other bad dad.
She's gonna be posting on Raised by Narcissists.
Yeah, exactly. He's gonna be like, why doesn't my daughter ever call? I bought her chocolate chip ice cream.
Okay, one last bit of Santa's Workshop. I would have replaced Bruce Willis in this movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I would have replaced him with a golden retriever.
I would have replaced him with a half-dead cactus.
John, what you got?
I would just take Bruce Willis and put him in Die Hard with a Vengeance and watch that instead. Simon says watch Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Okay, that's fair enough. Yeah, so -4, -3, is that where we're going to land on this? I think we're all ready
to leave
and do other things with our lives.
I mean, it's offensive to this movie even use Christmas the tiny bit that it did. It's like, come on, you got to give me fucking something here. Put some fucking Christmas lights up. Give me a goddamn tree. Run over a fucking Santa, like Santa cutout in a fucking car, something.
Yeah, or shoot Santa in the gut and then like rape his wife and just something.
Yeah, you know, just what? Like, give us anything at all.
Anything at all, please. I'm begging you. 1991. What the hell, man? Okay. Well, that's the last Boy Scout, everybody. Whether you are out braving the hordes of the Black Friday shoppers or you're sitting at home convalescing because you ate too much pumpkin pie, don't watch The Last Boy Scout. It's a bad time, and we had a bad time with it. But I hope you enjoyed us yelling about it for an hour and change. Because
I did learn something, though.
What's that?
There was a guy in that I thought was Joey Pants. It's not Joey Pants. It's a guy named Mike Papa John. There's a guy out there named Mike Papa John.
It's like a guy named Greg George Stephanopoulos. That's awesome.
Oh, good Lord.
Hey there, I'm Bradford Barack Obama. I love it.
My name's Joe KFC. Like, what? No. Okay, that's The Last Boy Scout. We're done. We've finished it. We've completed this mission of ours. Shane Black Friday, if we see you next year, it might be the last time we ever do it.
And it'll never be too soon.
He could pop up next year with a Christmas movie and we would be screwed.
After he hears this, he's probably gonna do it just to spite us.
I mean, it's kind of holding a gun to our own heads, and the gun is labeled T. Hanks Giving and has a bullet labeled Polar Express in it.
Oh yeah, that's an elephant in the room we haven't gotten to yet. Oh, I'm excited about that because I've never seen it.
God damn it.
Well, I gotta go. Bye.
Okay. We all have to leave. We all have better things to do now. So I'm gonna end this show by saying, if you enjoyed this podcast, thank you. I'm so blessed to have listeners who actually put up with our nonsense. If you want to talk at us, we are on Twitter at Christmas Creeps. We're on Facebook at Christmas Creeps. Go to do all the fun stuff that you do with podcasts. Like, comment, subscribe. Hey, guess what? We're also on Spotify now. If you're one of those weirdos who listens to podcasts on Spotify, we'll see how long the show lasts when I start putting in real music into this podcast. So I guess thank you, Libby, for joining us once again on this ridiculous journey of ours.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure, I think.
Quote unquote pleasure.
Pleasure.
And also, hey, go and check us out on the OST Party where we talk about movie soundtracks. Just this week, we have released a soundtrack, or rather a show about TV theme songs.
Yes, that brought us all back to our childhoods before we knew this movie existed.
Exactly. Bradford, Jonathan, do you want to plug anything before we go?
My Switch friend code is 7408927236 08.
Is that real?
That is my real Switch friend code. By the way, thank you folks for leaving iTunes reviews, but I do take umbrage at being called a gamer.
On that note, if you want to get in touch with me, log into Final Fantasy 14. I'm not going to give you any information. If you're in the server I'm on, you have to be in the same zone and yell, I might answer.
Okay, fair enough. And if you want to talk at me on Twitter, I'm at Corja Wombat. Just go hog wild. I really don't care.
You can find me at Libby Cudmore on Twitter. You can find me at record_Saturday on Instagram. And in addition to OST Party and occasionally moonlighting on this show, I'm also on the Shattered Shield podcast, where we'll be starting season 6 soon.
So come All on right. Back. Awesome.
Yeah.
You want to hear me yell about cop shows?
Hey, tell we gave you a little bit more fodder for that. So tell them how awful this is on their next.
Oh God, it makes me long for the subtle touch of Vic Mackey. Good God.
All right, well, folks, that's been Shane Black Friday for this year. So we will see you bright and early this December for another ridiculous Christmas movie. We have a couple fun things planned for you through the end of the year. So don't go anywhere. We got. One last month to go, folks, so hang in there. For Christmas Creeps, I'm Joseph Wade.
I'm Bradford.
I'm Johnny Five, the human robot.
And I'm Libby Cudmore.
Good night, everybody. Is that a kitty?
I hear a kitty.
I hear a kitty cat.
Let's all go play with our cats.
I don't have a cat, so I'll have to play with my dog.
Aww. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Happy Christmas.